This Jeep Talk Show episode is brought to you by, well, Real Truck. The best campfire stories are told where there are no campsites. Racks, running boards, and performance parts built to haul all your camping gear to the toughest to reach destinations. Get real deals on real parts for camping and adventure at realtruck.com. You see what they did there? They got like professional riders there.
I see that.
Isn't that
so
cool?
Good.
Real.
Yeah, it's really real at Real Truck.
Hey, I'm Tony, and welcome to the Jeep Talk Show, the premier show for Jeep enthusiasts and hardcore off-roaders. On tonight's episode, news stories, Jeep new EVs to come with ice. Not for your beverage, but...
Oh, wait, I thought you were talking about little nuggets of ice.
Internal combustion engines.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, okay, I'm with you now.
Yeah. And newbie nuggets, Wendy continues her series of using a spotter, and it must have stuff for your Jeep. 67 Designs dash mounting system. Have you heard about 67 Designs before, Wendy?
I haven't. I'm excited to hear about it.
I forget how I found them, but I found them back whenever, before I got the Gladiator, and actually installed a mounting system in the XJ. Now, they didn't have one for the XJ specifically, but I was able to have one of their mounting generic mounting systems and mount that into the XJ. And it's really nice to be able to have a place to put your phones or your GPS or whatever you may have that's outboard.
Perfect. Well, howdy, it's Wendy, and stay tuned for my favorite part about spotting.
Getting pissed off and berating them for not listening, I would guess.
Yeah, that's my secret. That's the secret side of me. No, it's not. Not really.
Yeah. So anyway, this is something that I was talking to you a little bit before we started recording here. Last week, Bill and I on the Flagship 2 episode, Bill and I were discussing a video that I saw recently. Actually, my wife was watching it, and I started watching it. It was Matt and his wife from Bleeping Jeep on Black Bear Pass, and they actually ran into sleet. He called it hail. I'm not going to call it hail because that was sleet, damn it. rain and sleet, and it was really, you could see the concern, hear the concern, and see the concern on their faces, and I would have been as well. And towards the end of the trail, there was some landslides, is what they were referring to, and I'm definitely not an expert, but just based on the 80s horror movies, I'm sorry, disaster movies that I'd seen, I guess they could be horror movies. It really wasn't a landslide. I mean, it wasn't like, Krakatoa east of Java landslide.
Yeah.
it was just some rocks covering the trail. And I'm not talking anything that was 20 feet high. And Wendy, you can see this picture, same picture that I used for the Flagship 2 episode last week. Mm-hmm. That's about, I mean, it's a substantial rock flow, but they're not big rocks. Mm-hmm. They're certainly, to me, that is transversible. In other words, you could drive your Jeep over that, and I don't think you'd even have to have a modified Jeep to get up and over that.
Well, first off, let me just explain to you that, you know, when you see video and or pictures,
oh, absolutely,
it doesn't tell the true story. So although this picture looks from us sitting here armchair quarterbacking it, hey, I could do that. Where you don't know, you're not there to be able to see how deep is the crevice in between those little humps that I see. How loose is that, and what's next to that for this guy on the picture? You guys have to check out the show notes.
There's another one. I mean, there's another flow just down the way. And you mentioned really good things, and I want to mention this really quick. I'm not picking on Matt. I'm not picking on any Jeeper.
No.
My question here is, we have these Jeeps that we can go anywhere with. Now we've gone anywhere with, and we're faced with something that we have no idea because we've never had to deal with this before. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why I'm bringing it up.
Well, there's a couple times we've had that happen here in Big Bear and areas. You know, we had severe rain and, 8 feet of snow last year that moved a lot of different terrain in the areas around here. Mm-hmm. So two things I'll speak to you about on that. So we're experienced Jeepers. We have the vehicles capable to do a lot of different things. But what happens is when you come across something like this, you need to assess what is your level of, quote, experience, what is happening with the ground. Again, I talk about my training and teaching. You got to look at the dirt and read it. And so two times on a trail from Big Bear to Pioneer Town, a lot of people know this area pretty well, Burns Canyon, also known as 2 and 02. We're on a regular road. It's passable by most vehicles, not necessarily Jeeps. And here's a big, huge boulder that came down with a lot of shale like this. So you try to assess, can I pass, can I go over the rock? Well, we couldn't go over the rock. But you could eventually get between the rock and the mountain, and which is what people had done until they could get the rock moved. But until that point came, you could not go around it because the sheer drop off was, I don't know how many feet, but it's more than probably 100 feet down. There's no way that we would have taken that chance and risk, even right. with our experience, right?
And you can't see that in this picture. It very well could have been a sheer drop-off. There's trees and stuff there. I mean, it's growing for something, but you have no idea, which obviously would factor into the calculation as far as going over this or not.
Well, here's the other thing, too. You don't know if the ground gave way underneath this shale. I'm calling it shale, which is not big boulders, but a lot of rock that came through. Mm-hmm. It could have blown out with a water flow, and then this now collapsed on the mountainside, and so it's not stable at all. I mean, that's one possibility. Another time we were doing a basic trail, and there was this type of situation almost visually like this. We could have passed, but we got out, we walked it to see, and as I'm walking it, I can hear the mountain making noise, as in rock and more stuff coming down. Even though nothing was moving, I could hear it. And I said to Bill, we are not going through. This was a road that you would go down, turn around and come back out. We could have been locked on the other side and not been able to come back out.
Right.
So there are times when you make decisions that in again, we're experienced. We could have easily what looks like we could traverse this on the picture that you have. But because I could hear the mountain moving and the dirt and rocks and things sliding and adjusting, that happens a lot out in the mountain ranges. So water comes down and flows, water unearths the dirt, and then it can just blow out. So I think caution is always good. If I was coming across this, I would have done what these guys are doing in this picture, walked it. I would have listened. And I would have seen, well, what exactly happened prior to me getting here before I traversed it. So, mm-hmm. And do they have to come back out this way? Because that's the other thing. When you go down a spot and you got to turn around and come back out, you got to make sure you can get out. Because there's no way we could have gotten out of that.
So I don't know Black Bear Pass because I've never mm-hmm. done it before. But my understanding, I think from Bill, who has done it, was that this is towards the bottom. And you're okay. just right there. Is it Telluride? The little town that this goes into, so they're right there getting to your drop off point. I guess that's mm-hmm. a bad thing to say for Black Bear Pass.
Yeah, I think so.
But they're almost there, and I don't know. I guess you can go the opposite way up Black Bear Pass.
Yeah, but it's not recommended, right? Isn't
right.
it a one-way drive-through? So
exactly.
What did these guys do? Do you know if they actually tried to traverse this, or did they?
No. What they did was, and you guys can see this in the video. They sat there for 2.5 hours waiting for the crew to come and clear the trail.
Oh, so somebody was coming to. Well, that's kind of cool.
I don't know that they knew anybody was coming. I think maybe they assumed it, but that's what they did. They sat there and waited. And I would imagine this is a common occurrence because rain does happen, snow happens, and then all
especially in that area in
yeah.
Colorado.
So there's actually some other shots that they do of this thing. And just looking at it from the video, I'm thinking to myself, I do not see an issue with this. And I'm thinking a stick poking around at the rocks is going to help me understand how loose this material is. It doesn't mean there's not more material coming. I mean, the rain had stopped. But it doesn't mean that there's not more rain coming or more rocks coming. But I mean, it's all a risk whenever we do this stuff.
Oh yeah.
So as long as it's stable for the moment, and you know, you may have to drive back over it. But I don't think that going back up Black Bear Pass was really an option here. So it's like wait and hope that the local government's going to take care of it, or walk out.
Well, this could be a trail, and I think Black Bear Pass might do this, where they are a little more aware of things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is that just because the rain stopped or it rained yesterday and not today, it has nothing to do with the terrain and how it's going to go. I mean, you could have dry days for a week and this could let loose. You could have no rain because you just don't know. So a lot of times, too, up in here in Big Bear, too, we get a lot of cold nights, and so it freezes and hardens and it cracks and expands and contracts and all this sort of physics. So I don't know. I'm going to, without having seen the video, been there. I'm going to err on their side only because it's probably what we would have done is just said, wait, this doesn't look safe. But again, this picture I'm looking at doesn't give me all the details.
Right.
Those guys walking, that could be a pretty good drop off. And again, the whole road could be blown out. And then this is now on it. So is it stable or is it not? And again, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. No, and again, this isn't second guessing Matt or what mm-hmm. they did or the waiting was a bad idea. It just brought up the question in my mind, if I was there enjoying Black Bear Pass and then had right. the, had the sleet and the rain and all this stuff that happened, and then I came upon this rock slide.
Yeah, I'd be.
How would I know what to do? I mean, obviously, not driving over it is the best decision. But then again, is that really the right decision? I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to wait.
Get out and walk it, and you see. And
yeah.
You listen and you feel.
Okay. Good. So you kind of say what I say, and mm-hmm. but I don't have any experience in the mountains. I don't have any experience with rock slides, and I know we have lots of listeners out there that are in the same position. Mm-hmm. So I can't say this enough. I am not berating Matt and the people that were out there on this trail for their decision to wait. They may have known that somebody was coming. Maybe it wasn't on the video. Now, if you watch the video, they had what do you call those things? The ones with the buckets on the end, the dirt rock mover type things, heavy equipment. And okay. Basically with the bucket on it, and they were cleaning this thing out, and it didn't go anywhere. Except, I mean, they just took it and dumped it over to the side.
It didn't
slide. All the rocks that was going up 100, 200 feet up the mountain, it wasn't that steep anyway.
But I think none of it slid.
I think it was stable enough to drive
stable
over.
Stable enough, right.
But that's hindsight.
You have 100%. You're watching some heavy equipment do something. But mm-hmm. again, when you're wheeling, first off, don't ever go alone, especially not Black Bear Pass. Mm-hmm. Two, make sure you have communication that actually can radio somebody for this kind of help. But third, you have to, when you wheel, you have to learn to read the dirt and understand what it's saying, even on a basic trail. You know, that's kind of what we sort of teach people, is to look at the dirt and understand what is it telling me. So these guys might be experienced in this type of off-roading where they can look at that and see where the water flow went, how much the mud came through. You can see how terrain is moved. The trees, you know, we've got some areas where the trees are upright and then you've got that mudslide starting and now they're coming at an angle. Well, right. That is something you got to pay attention to. When will that let loose and at what point? Mm-hmm. You know, out in California, we also think about earthquakes. So maybe this particular slide is fine and stable, but now you add an earthquake in there and does it do a little bit more? Then you've got the cold and the whatever. So I think it's something that, Tony, if you were going to go out into the mountains in Black Bear Pass, you're going to be with a group of people who have some experience and know ahead of time. You're going to take it very careful. And if you ran across this, I think you would have gotten out. You would have taken a look. You would have tried to assess, what am I looking at? We don't know how deep these little ruts are because I can see the way the picture is. It kind of rolls. You could get stuck and have no traction because it's so loose. And then if there's a slide happening, you're done. So
that's why I think you got to hit this thing at 50, 60 miles an hour at least.
Send it.
Get that forward momentum going.
Dang, I wish I had a 392 or a Hemi at the same time, right? But no, I think it's good that they are showing a video of maybe possibly waiting. And I think a lot of people probably wouldn't and maybe get themselves into trouble.
Yeah, so. Well, and it often reminds me, I know about high water because we get high water here.
Okay.
And I know that whenever you see water, like if it's a stream or a creek or a crick, if you want to be a Southeast Texan, if it's a creek and it's fast moving water. And it doesn't matter if it's not up to the side of your vehicle, just 6 inches
right.
on the tire
is
enough to move your Jeep. And hopefully there's a side rail or something that's going to keep you from going in. But so I know about not crossing fast moving water. We've all seen videos about fast moving water. But
yeah, and you have a lot more experience with that
exactly.
than I do.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's what happens out here in California. We don't get that much rain and you see all kinds of yahoos going through that fast moving water at 6 inches and their Jeep is floating away or their vehicle's stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So again, same kind of thing. You may not look at a slide the way that you look at water, but that's how you would need to look at it. You need to say, well, wait a minute, is this fast moving dirt? Is it stable? Can I get across? What's the worst case scenario if I can't? How am I going to get out? Same thing like you would do with water. So it would be the same thing for you. Just put it in the perspective of, I'm looking at it as if it was fast moving water.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, good. I just want to, I'm not trying to beat this into the ground, but I think it's important for people that have never experienced it to get some sort of idea about what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready?
It's time for the Jeep Talk Show with hosts Tony, Josh, Wendy, and Chuck.
All righty. Well, the next thing on the list here is new EVs may come with internal combustion engines, motors.
Can I just say it? Duh. Okay. That's what we've been saying all along. Hey, stop going 100%
EV. You see there? You see there in the show notes? I'm highlighting right now.
Oh, did you say it? Oh, okay. I love that.
We told you so.
Oh, surprise.
But it's good to know that somebody at Jeep gets it.
Finally. And we could have saved them money if they would listen to our show. We have so much great information.
Well,
why are you not calling us and asking us first?
Yeah. And I want to be fair. It's not like the people at Jeep are idiots. They're not. They're going along with what our federal government and the popular thing of the day is. Wendy, you've been on this earth for a while. How many world-ending disasters have you been through?
Oh my gosh, yes. Jeez.
It's always something. I don't know if it's to sell books or collect tax revenue or you know what they exactly they're doing.
Keep our thumb on us and keep us in control.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, it was and this was about around the time, I guess, that I'm forgetting the name. Charlton Heston was in it, where the Soylent Green. There we go. I was trying to remember the food. The overpopulation and stuff. Hell, there was even a Star Trek episode where they went to a planet and people were nose to nose. And you know, that just seemed a problem keeping the population from growing if you're butt to butt with everybody.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not going to help it.
The population is just increasing exponentially. Oh, so, I mean, it was like overpopulation, and then there was something else, and then there was something else. Oh, there was Y2K that was kind of one of those another big disasters.
Didn't we have acid rain at one point, too? There was something about acid rain.
And that happened, I think, because of all the acid in the 60s, and then there was rain afterwards. So there's been these things that come up and come and go. And, of course, the big thing right now, and I'm not picking on anybody, but this whole green thing where, you know, we're all going to die because it's going to get too hot and so on. And it very well may happen, but I don't think it's people generally.
By the way, we are all going to die. That's all part of it, right? You're born, and then you live a while, and then you die. So there you go.
And everything causes cancer. Life causes cancer. Without life, there would be no cancer. So I'm not saying we shouldn't be careful about things. Obviously, I mean, for example, there should only be one vehicle, and it should be a Jeep. And if that was the case, then everybody would be happy and safe. As long as they weren't crossing a rock pile. So anyway, new EVs may come with internal combustion motors. You know, Wendy, we've reported here about the Wagoneer S and the Recon being the first all-electric Jeeps to come out. And they're coming out very, very soon, like this summer.
I think it's this summer, wasn't it? I think it's what we reported.
Yeah. And at least I think they're both coming out, but Wagoneer S was definitely talked about, I think, for July. But anyway, the new Jeep CEO says, well, maybe they'll come with internal combustion engines as well.
They would be smart to do that because people are not, they're not jumping on that EV anymore. Their sales are lagging everywhere if you look at the news reports. So I don't understand why we couldn't do both. And then you have an option. That would be better. Everybody would be on board with that one.
Options are good.
But forcing us to only do electric? Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how it works out for California, because California definitely is doing the forcing thing. And this has nothing to do with Jeeps or any other thing. But I think we've talked about this before. And it's so funny. April 1st, $20 an hour minimum wage for fast food
which are
workers.
Now all closing, by the way.
Well, but who would have seen that coming?
a smart person. How about that? Duh.
Can you imagine if this was 2 years down the road and the Tesla robots were really out there and prepared and ready to go, pretty soon there would be people not making $20 an hour. They'd be making $0 an hour, and a hamburger would be 59 cents.
It's pretty much what they want you to do, is to not work and just be dependent on the government so they can control you.
Yeah.
I swear.
You know, I have a theory about this. Again, not part of the show, so you guys can fast forward. So yeah. What do you do if you cannot legally keep people from eating fast food? Because the nanny state wants you to be healthy, because if you're not healthy, you're not paying taxes because you're dead. Mm-hmm. It does mean you can vote in an election, but other than that, you can't collect taxes.
If you're dead, you can vote twice.
So do you think there's a possibility that they're doing this stuff because they want the fast food places to close? Because they really don't give a shit about the workers.
They don't care about that, but they're trying to say, hey, I'm going to give you $20, so vote for me.
Oh, of course.
Just like they're letting everybody in and then saying, we don't care that you're illegal and breaking all the rules. By the way, you can now become a police officer and be illegal in this country. I'm sorry. We are really getting off the trail.
I was complaining to my wife today about they are passing laws that will allow people to arrest somebody that's illegally entered this country.
I'm sorry. How does this work?
I'm sorry. Wasn't there already a law?
There is a law. How do you enforce a law when you're breaking the law to enforce the law?
And now they're passing laws to keep illegal people from voting in elections. Wait a minute. Wasn't the law that if you had to be a citizen to be able to vote?
But, you know, California doesn't demand driver's license anymore to prove that you are who you are to vote. So in theory, you could vote multiple times and no one would even know.
Well, it all works out in the end. So we live in a world, and I don't think it's anything new. We live in a world of nonsense. And by the way, it's both sides. It's not just one side.
Oh, yeah.
Because they both play the game. I just like one side. I think one side is a little better than the other. But we always have to keep an eye on them. There needs to be term limits. We need to get those jokers out of there. It shouldn't be a career to be a politician, at least not a paid government politician.
Well, and then you get benefits forever. So you could be the worst person in the world. Oh, wait, that person's at the helm right now. You know, never bring
laws. Would that be federal or California? And if the answer is yes, you are correct.
Yes, you are correct. I mean, when you've been in that position or positions your whole life in the government and you've done nothing to prove that you bring in new bills or help. And I don't know. Let's not go off on that tangent because I could go all night. That's a whole nother talk show we should start.
Yeah, but it does kind of align with this stuff that's going on with the EVs. And because the government has been being a very big salesperson to push EVs, kind of like they were pushing windmills and...
And I'm kind of surprised the auto industry didn't push back. Did you notice? Nobody really pushed back. They kind of started with both, so you could have a hybrid.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it was like, you have to do it by this date. And everybody went, oh, we got to scramble. And I'm like, you guys didn't do any homework to figure out, is this really what the consumers want? Is this going to be feasible?
Yeah.
Like you talked about, we don't even have a power grid that's sustainable for what we do right now, let alone let's just add all this stuff into it.
Right.
So I don't know. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, and the battery technology is just not there. I mean, it is very, very good, and it is close. But the size and the weight of these things, I mean, we reported on tires. The tires wear out a lot quicker on these much heavier vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it really does look like the Jeep CEO, and I don't know, maybe some other CEOs are doing the same thing. I guess they are, because Ford has pulled back on their EV stuff. Mm-hmm. Somebody else did too. I think it's Toyota has pulled back on their EV stuff. I mean, basically, these people are making stuff because the government wants them to make it. And the consumer is saying, well,
it's not, and it's not profitable for these companies. They're not going to sustain being able to curate these jobs. Anyway.
So I'm very happy to see this. And I guess this is one of the advantages of new management. That they make these decisions, and maybe the former one wanted to do the same thing, but he wasn't getting his support. They were telling him, no, make it work, And so he left, and somebody came in and said, "Hey, this ain't going to work. I mean, if you guys want to sell vehicles, we need to make vehicles that people want to buy." And I think these, both the Wagoneer S and the Recon, are nice looking vehicles and interesting looking vehicles. They're not off-road vehicles to me. But I think Jeep can make other things that that aren't off-road vehicles. But it just, I think if like the Recon, for example, comes with a 3.6, now you're talking about something that everybody can drive, and they don't have to worry about finding a charging station. I think that the whole EV thing, it's going to happen, absolutely. And I want you guys to take that away from any time I talk about negatively about the electric vehicles. Electric vehicles are going to happen, but it's not time for them yet. I think it would be a wonderful second vehicle, but why in the hell would you want to spend $30,000-$40,000 for a second vehicle when you can buy one for say $40,000
and have both?
Yeah, and drive both whatever options. The hell you want to drive, because there's gas stations wherever the hell you want to drive.
And by the way, I don't think the electric is $30,000, Tony. I think it's way higher.
It could be. I'm just saying, let's say it was less. And I say that because I know Tesla has plans for a $25,000 vehicle. Although I don't know if you've been following this at all, the full self-driving is out. Mm-hmm. They've taken it out of beta, but it's now called supervised. So you still can't just have it drive itself. They're supposed to be announcing on August the 8th about the robotaxis, full self-driving vehicles that do not have anybody in them except for the passengers.
Gee, what could go wrong there?
No,
I just can't imagine.
No steering wheels, no pedals for brakes or the go juice. I guess you could say juice with a battery. So, no, I think you're going to be very surprised. The full self-driving is doing very, very well, including reacting to hand signals from pedestrians. Now, I have a theory that they're going to say, "Yeah, come on," and then jump out in front of the Tesla.
Yeah. I don't know.
But no, I mean, my wife is in the same boat you are, but it's going to happen, and it's going to be, you're going to look back on it and go, "My God, this worked out so well." If it's not a Tesla and not using the full self-driving from Tesla, there definitely will be problems, and there already has been.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think we're going to see that, and we're going to see the full self-driving in all vehicles. I'm going to guess within the next 10 years, and there are going to be a generation of people that freak out. There goes grandpa or grandma again talking about driving a vehicle. My God, why would you want to do that? It's so dangerous. So, mark my words. All right. So I just wanted to mention this before we get out of here. We're doing the batteries type stuff right now that does not have the power density that we need. Other alternative fuels have been promised to us. I don't know if you've heard about any of these, but compressed air was one of them, which makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
None.
but people have created vehicles that work off of compressed air.
Yeah.
Hydrogen, and I'm speaking specifically about hydrogen, where they use the hydrogen as the combustible fuel, not a fuel cell. And the problem with hydrogen is storing enough of it to be able to go very far down the road before you have to refill, like 30 to 50 miles. There's also the unicorn farts and pixie dust, which I'm very very disappointed that didn't work out, because that just sounds great.
That sounds perfect.
I think you have to use ayahuasca to collect that stuff. So if you want to really do something that will make a difference, let's go with the technology that we know works and is very plentiful and nearly infinite. Fit a nuclear reactor in my Jeep. So work on making that thing small enough where you can put it in my Jeep, and it's running all the time. I don't have to get do anything except get in, press the pedal, and go.
I love it.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you're following the new series, Wendy, but this is starting to sound like the Fallout series that has just come out on Prime. I think all the cars in the game are all prior nuclear powered vehicles from the 50s. So it's really cool. All right. So if you're ready for the great outdoors, make sure your truck is too, ready to haul, ready to tow, and ready to make take along everything you need for a day on the water or on daybreak in the woods, because no matter what kind of game you're chasing, we say bring it to the honey hole, to the hunt. The honey hole just kind of disturbs me. To the hunt, to whatever you love to do, and whatever outdoor brings you your way, because you can't bring home a trophy unless you bring a truck that's got your back. Real Truck. Bring your truck to life. Realtruck.com.
What? Where's the noob?
Noob! 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 Hey, newbie!
Newbie! Noob Nugget.
It's time for Newbie Nuggets.
Well, as promised, we're going to talk about nonverbal commands and spotting. Now, the last 2 weeks, we talked about using a spotter, you sitting in that driver's seat, and then using somebody to sort of be your eyes as you get over different obstacles. All right, one of the benefits of nonverbal commands and spotting is it tends to keep the driver's eyes on you and paying attention versus only listening and then looking out their driver window. So the commands in nonverbal should be really easy to understand and obvious. In other words, when you make a hand gesture, it should be simple but large and not obscured by clothing or gloves, things that I've done in the past and forgotten that I'm wearing all black, including my gloves, and they can't see my hands. So keep that in mind as far as your hand signals. And doing them too many times is not necessarily going to help that driver. So make sure that you're making those simple nonverbal hand signals. So let me just give you a quick little verbal. So you might have left. I'm looking at the camera going, I don't know which way it is, but you might point left. You see somebody pointing left or pointing right. They might use their finger or their thumb to do that. They want you to either go left or right. Coming forward is generally done motion like this with your hands coming up. That means your hands, your palms are facing the spotter and you come forward motion. Go back, they're going to be, you know, facing, the palms are going to be facing the driver and kind of pushing back to go reverse. Nonverbal could also be climbing up or down a rock or an obstacle. The spotter might point to it and then use their palm to raise it up or to point down. That's a great way to get you to know, hey, I'm going to drop off of something. Usually I will point at the left or the right. If I'm pointing at both and I'm going to say, okay, you're going to go down, then that's kind of what I would do as far as that's concerned. Probably one of the most important things is stop, and that's usually done with a closed fist. That's going to be in whether it's verbal or nonverbal. Generally, someone who's going to use their hand, it kind of gives you a sign that you need to stop. Just a quick note on stopping. Stopping, you better stop right when they say to stop. The spotter's job is to see what's happening with the tires, what could happen, what's not happening. And by you stopping, it actually allows the spotter to reassess. Maybe they need to look at something or give you some additional cues or information to help you get off of that obstacle. Now, when we say stop, that doesn't mean that you put your foot on the brake and then you decide at some point, I'm a little tired, I'm going to go ahead and put it in park. Y'all know when you put your vehicle in park in any kind of an incline, of any sort, the vehicle will move slightly. So make sure that you are not taking your foot off that brake until you're told to do so by that spotter. That has happened to me. I was actually putting rocks to help this one Jeeper. He wasn't paying attention to the cues and the rules. He decided it was taking too long, took his foot off the brake, put it into park, and the next thing you know, the Jeep rolls. Well, I was underneath there putting rocks in. So that can be a scary position for those of you helping to help somebody out. So make sure if you're told as the driver to stop, you do not do anything except keep your foot on that brake and wait until you are released from that position from that spotter. And that just goes for spotters. If you're a spotter giving that command, make sure that you clarify with that driver. That means do not put it in park. Do not take it off. So especially if you've got people underneath the Jeep helping or trying to clear something or in the way of working to get you free, that is a great way to get yourself not invited again to a run and or pulled through a windshield if you run over somebody. So, yeah, there you go. Anyway, so that's something that you just need to know is that stop means stop. And please do not do that. So now my favorite way of spotting is nonverbal completely when I actually have the driver mirror what I'm doing. So if I'm standing there, I'm going to grab their steering wheel kind of at the 2 and 10 o'clock position. And I will slightly move that steering wheel as a mirror to have you, the driver, pay attention to what I want you to do. So I'm not barking any commands. I'm not using my thumb and trying to point to driver, how much is that, or, you know, passenger or anything like that. So what I like to do is mirror. I actually learned that technique from Don Alexander. We use it a lot in our training because it has that student which has to pay attention and now they're watching. So what it means is if I'm holding that steering wheel and I want you to go just a tiny little bit, that's great. If I want you to go more, I'm going to go ahead and move my hands more. So what's nice about that is that you pay attention to me completely and you get to feel more your way of what you're doing. So that is something that I do. One of my favorite ways to do it is a great way to train. I really love it when we come up to an obstacle and we watch other people go through and, you know, husband and wives are yelling or someone screaming, you know, passenger, passenger, more passenger. And, you know, the driver doesn't understand what that means, right? So here we go through super quiet. There's no yelling. Everything's calm and everybody gets through and nobody has any issues. So it is something you have to think about. As a driver, you're like, well, do I mirror or go the opposite of what you're doing? So you as a spotter, if you choose to do that, you're going to mirror whatever they're doing. And it is interesting as a spotter because you're used to giving directions verbally left or right or driver or passenger. Now you're doing kind of the opposite thing as a spotter, but that's a whole nother conversation of how to do that. So that is something that is, I love to do it. I think it's great. It's very effective. People that have wheeled with us just think, wow, this has been the nicest, coolest. It's relaxed. It makes it more fun.
It's like these people know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, something like that. But as a new driver, as maybe you've been sitting passenger for a while and you want to try to drive, I think it could be very confusing to get all these different commands from people. So remember, as I said, the last two episodes, you as the driver can ask for clarification. You can ask for a better understanding of what that command means and don't get yourself frustrated. And then you as the spotter, please understand that when you've got people that are new, that are learning, you may know what you're doing and what you want them to do, but they may not be understanding what you're trying to translate it. So try the nonverbal, see if you can try to mirror what I do. It is really effective. We've even got some videos, I believe, on our YouTube channel on that as well to help out. So now, one other thing I'm going to say about the spotter is that you need to be visible. That'll happen sometimes if, you know, on an incline and you're sending up high, the driver can't see you or coming down. Likewise, you may have to squat down to be able for them to see what your hands are doing. So make sure that you are visible at all times. And you as the spotter, don't forget, you've got to slow down, stop the vehicle at times and reposition yourself, especially if you're in rocks. You don't want to be backing up and then fall down and hit your head. You just want to make sure that you're being safe as well. So always have enough distance between you and the vehicle, especially if they're coming downhill. And you as a driver, man, listen to whatever that spotter's telling you. But it's a lot of fun. It's an extra set of eyes to help you. And it's a great way for you to learn and gain your confidence. Another way that I talk about always in my training is get out and watch. If you're a new driver and you're getting to an obstacle, again, I don't recommend you're the second one in line. Maybe you're the middle or toward the back. Get out and watch what that spotter's doing. Are they yelling? Are they using nonverbal? How are they doing their cues to help those drivers get through? Do you like what that spotter's doing? If you don't and you don't feel confident, then get somebody that you do feel confident with. So that's just an ongoing battle with out there in the road. Is you want to learn, but you need to let someone teach you. But at the same time, if you don't like it or you don't feel comfortable, you have the option to change that out. So anyhow, that's it on using a spotter. Next week, I'll talk about how to pick a line, which I think is part of spotting and part of getting over those obstacles. But if you have any questions and you want more information on this, you can always reach me, jeeptalkshow.com/contact. I'm available to help you guys out with that. I love to share my information. We've got YouTube channel or YouTube videos on our Trails for Women YouTube channel as well. So check it out and reach out if you need to. I'm happy to give you guys any advice on that and help you out. So
Wendy, is this one of the signals, hand signals you use? And don't panic. It's not going to be the one you're thinking. It's,
okay.
It's this one.
Yeah. Look at me doing the eye thing. there have been times when, you know, someone says, I'm going to use you as a spotter. So I'm doing my thing and I'm mirroring them. And then they stick their head out the window and I'm looking. I'm like, okay, either you use me or you don't, because I'm not going to do both and I'm not going to scream at you. but it's kind of fun. Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned Don Alexander. Don Alexander's publisher recently sent me a new book that Don did. Mm-hmm. I know you're familiar with it. Overlanding Vehicle Builder's Guide. I believe this is the newest book from Don Alexander.
It is.
And there's a lot of people out there that are very interested in overlanding. And even if they haven't done it or they're not planning on doing it, mm-hmm. a lot of people are very interested to know what the overlanding mystique is. You know, we always make a joke here about, you know, what is overlanding? You know, it's just like, you know, what's the definition? There really isn't one.
Camping on dirt.
Yeah, and I make the joke, is it, or did you take a sandwich with you? Then you're on the landing.
Yes, always.
So, but yeah, check this out. We'll have it here in the show notes for this episode, 1022, and you can just go straight over to Amazon and pick this Builder's Guide up. It's a great paperback book, and you know, put it in your vehicle that you're overlanding in, and if you get confused about what overlanding is, you can review it in this book. Oh, and Wendy, I've been threatening this for a while. During your segment, I was paying attention, but during your segment, I went and looked to see if we had any new reviews at Apple.
And
I found one, and I thought it was pretty funny. Kev's Mud Sub. You get it?
Ooh, I get it. Yeah. Perfect.
He is a Colorado native. He gives 2 thumbs up for a great podcast. Always find it entertaining, learning new ideas, tips, and tricks. This is going to be directly to you as well. Can't get enough. Thanks a bunch from Kevin from Colorado. I hope to hope a haste Blazer, I don't know what that is, with Jeep Wagoneer axles is close enough to a Jeep.
Oh, so he's got a Blazer and he's got big axles in there, right?
Well, see, this is what I'm saying. People listen to this show that don't have a Jeep. Sometimes,
which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's welcome. And the way I look at it is, if you got a Toyota, we may talk some sense into you.
Well, what I think is cool is he said, you know, 2 thumbs up, which I get. He's got 2 thumbs, but he gave us 5 stars. That's even.
Well, 5 thumbs would just be weird.
Well, that's what I said. I had to clarify that. Sound 2 thumbs.
Fine with 5 thumbs up, and I'm not a mass killer.
Well, thank you for listening, Kevin. And you know what? Reach out if we can give you any more information, or just keep listening. And
I like the old Blazers. The old Blazers were really cool. So that's really neat. I'm assuming it's one of the full size Blazers where those were cool because they had a removable fiberglass top on them, kind of like the Jeeps did, the ones from the 70s and 80s. So I wanted the Blazer for a very long time. And then once I got to start understanding how four-wheel drive systems work, I found out about that extremely short front drive shaft on the Blazers. Mm-hmm. So if you started lifting a Blazer, you it was more than just lifting it. You had to do some things to that shaft, that drive shaft on the front. Never got that far, so I'm just kind of talking out my ass because that's just what I had, what I was told. There was no internet back then, so you know, it's just like, you know, you're talking to drunk people for advice and information.
From the mind of Nikki G.
Hey, this is Nikki G, and just caught episode 1016 with Josh, which is good to hear from Josh again. Wish he'd come back to the show on a more permanent basis. But you asked, what does Moab mean to you? And as you know, I drive an XJ, so I hear the acronym Moab all the time. It stands for Move Over, Asshole Bastard. And on the very same episode, you talked about Jeepers getting left behind. And it's funny because whenever I go out on a trail ride with a group, we always stop for lunch and somebody throws a ball. I run out into the woods to catch it, and I want to come back, everybody's gone. Well, that's not
why.
What I'm calling. I'm calling to tell you that the Earth is covered with 95% water, and 0% of it is carbonated. So, therefore, the Earth is flat. All right, boys and girls, I'll chat you later. You have a good one. Bye.
And I've got a huge ass.
So I don't know if it's good or bad that I now understand Nikki's jokes. Nikki G's jokes. Like, I got that one. That made sense.
Yeah.
That's a little scary.
It was a little flat, though. So I'll just have to add that one.
I love it.
Hey, and our next interview is with David Adams. And you can find David Adams at facebook.com/TheGimpyJeepGuy. He is a quadriplegic, and he jeeps a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story, and I don't mean to make a big deal out of being a handicap, but to me, like I told David in the interview, it's amazing to me that he is actually able to be positive, get out there, do stuff. It's his one life, and he lives it. And it's just really, really cool and a great story to anybody that's bitching and moaning about anything.
I was just going to say, what a great inspiration, you know?
Yeah.
Get out there and do it.
Absolutely. And he has moved to San Hollow because the Moab trails are too tame. He needs something a little more active and egregious to wheel on. And Greg Henderson from Unofficial Use Only was actually building him a not a panel van. It's a Jeep that they only made 11,000 of them on, and or made 11,000 of them. And David got one, and it is going to be the thing is going to a ramp's going to come down the back of it's going to roll up, and then David's going to be able to wheel his tracked vehicle that he has that he rides around on standing straight up, or his wheelchair, and then drive this thing. And it's a really, really cool thing. Greg doesn't have it right now. It's been passed on to a group that puts in the handicap stuff so that you can steer and control the fuel and the brakes and stuff with it. So it's been passed over there. So, but I'm really looking forward to seeing this. I had never seen one of these things before. And Greg had it in his shop for several Zoom meetings that he was on. Not specifically, you know, we weren't focusing on Greg. He was just a member of the Zoom crew. And of course, we get to watch what Greg's doing while he's on the Zoom meeting. So very fascinating build. And I apologize. I forget. It's based on, I think, the Willis vehicle. So it's a very small van. And but listen to this episode later this week on Friday, and you'll get more information, including the model of the Jeep that David has.
Very cool.
All right, and our must-have stuff for your Jeep. And Wendy, I don't know, do you and Bill have anything set up in your Jeep on the dash so that you guys can put up your phones or navigation mm-hmm. aid or anything that sticks out, you know, from
We used to, but now he got the Stinger radio, so I don't have to have I think it was Magellan for trails and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was up there, but.
So you guys don't have a place to put your phones and maybe charge them while you're traveling or out on the trail?
No, and that Jeep, it's a 2008, so it's stuck right between the seats.
And this is specifically for the JLs and the JTs, but they do have these things for earlier model Jeeps, so this might be something that you guys will be interested in.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about the 67 designs, then, like I said, Jeep JL and JT Series 55 Rail. Now, this is the base of any type of thing that you were going to start with, because now with this rail and ball mount, or multiple ball mounts that slide in a channel, so you can slide it up and down and tighten it wherever you want to tighten it, you can put on one of these little like carbon fiber rods and then attach a phone clamp type thing to it. Actually, with mine, I mean, this thing fits perfectly in that little slot that's on the center dash up close to the windshield. And I don't think I had to drill any holes to install this. It used all the mounting things that were already there. I think I removed a rubber piece or something, and it had holes that I could mount this thing to. So there was nothing. It was a super, super easy install. Now, I didn't get all of the stuff from 67 Designs because I wanted to install something that would cordlessly charge my phone and my wife's phone just sitting in the cradle. So I actually piecemealed something off of Amazon and made wireless charger.
Didn't you make something like a 3D holder or something too?
That's not for this though. This is for a handheld radio that was separate than this. But yeah, you could put it on this. And that's kind of the cool thing. It's just kind of like a piecemeal thing that you can add to your system, and you can change the rod. So if you wanted to put a laptop or something, a tablet on this thing, you could. If you want to have it for your phone, you can, or you can have both those things because this thing is long enough to put multiple balls and multiple rods on there and multiple mounting devices. So it's a very malleable tool that you can use. And this is the base. So I recommend going over and having a look at 67designs.com and look for this Series 55 rail. Now, the rail by itself, and I think it comes with one ball, and the ball is what you attach the rod to, if you're wondering what the hell I'm talking about. Okay. It's $69 for the rail system. I'm cheap. I think that's a little pricey, but I did buy it, and it has worked out perfectly. It's gone on multiple trips to Hidden Falls and now two trips to Easter Jeep Safari.
Nice.
Absolutely no issues at all. The phone stays in the thing that I put on there, for, and it charged it. It charged both phones, actually. And I actually hid the wires behind the dash, so I don't even have dangling wires, which I just, I just hate.
Yeah.
They always get in the way.
Always.
Yeah, it's really good. I've used it. I think I got this just shortly after I got the Gladiator, so it's been in the Gladiator since May of 2021-ish.
Very cool.
All right, well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Jeep Talk Show. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform or on Apple. Your feedback helps us improve the show and reach more Jeep enthusiasts like yourself. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media. Like, I love telling you about Instagram, but I'll tell you about TikTok this time. TikTok, I'm sorry. We get quite a bit of views on TikTok, and you get to get little teasers of the YouTube videos that we're putting out. And I don't know if you all know this or not, but every episode that we were doing is now available on YouTube. So if you'd like to see what you're missing, or like I said last time, miss what you're seeing, you can go over to YouTube and just search for Jeep Talk Show. And then when you're there, subscribe, because that way you'll get notifications and you won't miss anything. If you want to miss something, I understand, you don't have to subscribe. Finally, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. Go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact, and you'll find multiple ways to contact us. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Jeep Talk Show. Wendy, thank you a lot for being here. And
absolutely.
We have a few new people in our Discord server, and one of them asked tonight, he goes, is there a Zoom meeting tonight? Because we record on Thursday. And I responded with, yeah, it's not an official Zoom meeting, but yeah, everybody gets on. That wants to get on at 7:30 p.m. Central Time on the Zoom meeting, the same link that we use for the Tuesday night roundtable recording, and they like it because there's no listening to the show. They just get on there and have fun talking to each other.
Have fun, yeah, talk to each other.
There's no pay. You just have the fun.
Have the fun.
No payment for listening to the show. All right, Wendy, have a great night. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Broadcasting since 2010.